In Ayurveda, there's an old saying that says that the pain is directly across from the bliss. And the reason for the pain is to get your attention. So you can go to the pain, through the pain, access who you truly are, and let who you truly are out.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Simply Ayurveda, a place where we learn how to apply Ayurveda's ancient wisdom into our everyday lives. I am your host and Ayurvedic counselor, Julia, and today I have a special episode. Today, we will be exploring Ayurveda's perspective on cannabis. And this is a very exciting topic for me because ask anyone that's close to me and they will tell you how much I have loved exploring the possibilities of cannabis. I was never big into drinking. I used to drink, but if you were to hand me a drink or a joint or edible, I would always choose the joint or the edible. And aside from enjoying it medicinally and recreationally, my genuine interest in it actually began when I first started reading about herbal medicine and when I really first started diving into other holistic modalities. And so I did a lot of self-experimentation. You know, I would see how different strains made me feel, which ones helped with my panic and anxiety that I was experiencing in college. I would see which ones helped me be creative and which ones would ground me. And all of this to say that I was really fascinated with how this plant can be used. And so as I started studying Ayurveda, I wanted to understand how this plant was used and treated in ancient times compared to how it's being used and treated today. So I invited someone to come explore this topic with me. Dr. John Dewayard is a globally recognized expert in Ayurveda, natural health, and sports medicine, and he has been teaching Ayurvedic medicine and nutrition internationally for almost 40 years. John received his Ayurvedic training in India and received his doctorate in chiropractic medicine from Los Angeles College of Chiropractic. Dr. Dewayard is the founder and director of Life Spa, a holistic wellness center in Boulder, Colorado, as well as the creator of lifespa.com, a leading Ayurvedic health and wellness resource on the web. John is also the author of 7 books where he has evolved the way Ayurveda is understood across the world. So it is with great pleasure to welcome you today, Dr. John Dewayard, to Simply Ayurveda.
Thank you, Julia. It's really nice to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you. How about we start with you telling us a little bit about yourself and how you got started in Ayurveda?
Yeah, out of high school, I went to an aeronautical school, learned how to fly. Thought I'd go into the Navy and fly planes and jets, but that turned out not to be a thing. And then I got a 2-year degree in civil engineering, and my dad was a contractor, so I thought I should do that. And that wasn't really my thing. And then I went to California. I was a ski instructor in Vail, and I ended up getting invited to go to California and go to stunt school, and did that, and was doing, like, my teacher wanted me to do like a 1,000 shoulder rolls a day, which is like a lot of jumping and falling and high falls and all this. And I was getting beat up. So I started going to see a chiropractor at the California College of Chiropractic back in LA when I was there, and had a dear friend that was there. And one thing led to another. I was just blown away by the sports medicine impact of that. And that got me into chiropractic. From there, I was taking a 500-hour acupuncture course while I was in school. And they mentioned the word Ayurveda. And I don't know why that word stuck in my head, and I couldn't get it out of my head. And I wanted to know what it was, but there was nowhere to, it was 1980. There was nowhere to go to get Ayurveda in that time. So I just kept digging and digging and learning it, but I knew I wanted to do it. And I went to my first, this might have been 82 maybe or something like that. I went to an Ayurvedic lecture, my first one that I heard. It was a kind of a, it was a meditation lecture, but he mentions Ayurveda. And afterwards I went up to him and I said, hey, I'm doing an Ironman. I wonder if this is a good thing to do from an Ayurvedic perspective. And he looked at me and he said, well, what's an Ironman? I said, well, it's where you run 26 miles and you bike 112 miles and you swim 2.5 miles in the ocean. He looked at me and he said, why do you do that? And I was like completely dumbfounded because I had never thought about why. I just did it because I could and I loved it, whatever. And I just was like hemming and hawing. He kind of rolled his eyes and he said, do you meditate? And I said, yeah, I do. I meditate. I love it. It's great. My mom taught me, you know, how to learn transcendental meditation when I was 17 in high school. It was great. Love it. And he goes, do you sleep when you meditate? I go, deeply. It's amazing. I get this deep sleep. I love it. And he looked at me again, sort of rolled his eyes and looked at me and said, meditation is different than sleep. When you're meditating, you should be restfully alert and not conked out, you know. And he said, you're probably exhausted from all that exercise and you probably need to just rest. And I said, well, does that mean that if I can not sleep during my meditation, would it then be okay to do an Ironman? And he just rolled his eyes and said, yeah, yeah, just please get out of here. But that was enough for me, you know, to just sort of like go off into this world of less is more. Started training less and started going to meditation classes. I went away for a 2-week meditation course and I came back from that. I don't know. There's no other word for it than bionic. In my book, Body, Mind, Sport, I read about all this. I call it jet fuel. It was like the thing that just, I pulled back the bow and I got so much rest that I was shot out of a cannon. I used to compete in the South Bay in California, where westward sort of triathlons really started in this country anyway, and other than Hawaii, of course. And, you know, and I was treating many of the top athletes, I was treating some of the Nike team guys. I was just, you know, really in it, you know. And a bunch of my friends started meditating after they found out what I did and saw my performance go up. Something happened because I went from being a kind of an okay, mediocre triathlete to being competitive and actually placing in many of my events. And it was like mind-boggling to me. And it just didn't happen to me, you know, in sports, you know. And I was really into the whole runner's high thing. That's what my Body, Mind, Sport book ended up being about, where we did research on nose breathing versus mouth breathing exercise. And we found that when you breathe through your nose, your brain goes into a meditative alpha state. And we actually published that study in the International Journal of Neuroscience and found that was an unprecedented finding where when you're running, you could actually go into a meditative, calm, coherent brain, alpha bursted state where you're basically running as fast as you can, but your mind's responding to that as a meditation. Mm. And that was like, wow. And there was so much science that happened in that time. I was just sort of blown away. And it was all from just getting deep rest, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's what just got me like hooked on this whole less is more Ayurveda thing. I was just really hooked. And in 1986, after I graduated, I ended up having an opportunity to go to India for a short period of time. China had opened up the border where you could actually go into Tibet. And we got permission to ride our mountain bikes from Lhasa, Tibet to Kathmandu. And the roads were open. And my sister was married to a magician, Doug Henning, who back in the old days, he was the long hair with the beard and the mustache, and he was like a real famous magician. But he did like TV specials way before many folks don't remember him. He's recently passed away. And he was into real magic, into meditation, and really into that. And, you know, and my sister called me up and says, John, Doug Henning had a vision, lucid dream, something that there was an accident. The road collapsed and you fell hundreds of feet down and you were paralyzed from the waist down. And he saw you playing wheelchair basketball. So please don't go.
Oh my God.
Like, you got to be kidding me, right? I mean, we have permits. This took forever to do. And you can't not. No, I'm not doing that. Stop. Don't ever do that again. You know, my mom calls me up 2 weeks later. And she said, I had a lucid dream, but right around the same time Doug had that thing. And it was similar. It wasn't the same. There was helicopters. The road did collapse and, you know, and so on and so forth. You were injured severely and please don't go.
I have chills.
I know, right? So I said, okay, I won't go. My sister was, they were really into TM and they were going to India to be there in the ashram for a while. And they said, why don't you just, you can't go to Tibet because that's against the rules because you're going to die if you go anywhere in Tibet. So you can come with us. And that's how it started. I went to the TM ashram and I met Maharishi Mahesh Yogi there. And he asked me the first night I met him, he said, could you please stay here permanently? And I was like, I want to teach you Ayurveda. And I was like, oh my God, well, that was easy. I had only been in India for like 6 hours and I got invited to learn, stay up permanently and study Ayurveda. It was like unbelievable.
Wow.
And I said, I can't stay permanently because I have student loans and a career and I'm practice and all that. He said, well, just stay a couple of weeks. Turned into a year and a half. Ended up meeting my wife there. I got married, got pregnant, met Deepak Chopra there. He invited me to come back to Massachusetts and run his new Ayurvedic center where I started training medical doctors, which I really needed to have some modern science to back it up in a way. Mm-hmm. And that's what sort of launched me into teaching Ayurveda from the ancient wisdom side and the modern science side. And I never thought for a second that there would be thousands and thousands of articles and that I've written that have ancient wisdom and modern science. I just thought there'd be a couple, you know. But there's just Ayurveda is vast, and the research that's been done, most of it, they didn't know they were proving an Ayurvedic principle, but they were. So that's my story. And that's how I got into it and fell in love with it. You know, the whole Rasayana, you know, branch of Ayurveda, that this is about longevity, and longevity is needed because you need time to thin the veil between the physical and the spiritual. So you don't realize that you're a spirit only when you die, that we can have that ability to be aware of the fact that we are spiritual beings while we're here. And that was what Ayurveda was all about, that we have perception as a human being to perceive subtle energy like no other instrument on the planet. And this is an instrument, and we have to learn to refine it. And that is really what I believe Ayurveda is about, is refining this instrument. And you need time to do it. And that's why we got to live a long time.
Yeah, I love what you just said. I think that sums up Ayurveda perfectly, that we're spiritual beings having a human experience, right? We are not spirits just when we die. And we can tap into those subtle energies through refining the body. And wow, like what an incredible story you just shared. Like from almost riding through Tibet to going to an ashram and staying for a year studying Ayurveda. And if I'm picturing those roads correctly, the roads that your family members had the lucid dreams about, it's not outrageous that they had that vision, right? Because those are the roads that are really tiny that wind up and down the mountainside. They have no guardrails, and landslides are very, very common. So thank goodness you listened to their intuition. And I mean, then you met your wife, you had your whole career. Look at where it's taken you. It's incredible. So I'm really interested in talking to you today about Ayurveda's perspective on cannabis. You know, cannabis is a plant with such a rich ancient history since the beginning of time. It is believed that it originated in Central Asia, where it began to make its way all over the continent. And it's been used for so many different purposes, including fiber for textiles, seeds for food, and then medicine in ancient Chinese, Indian, Egyptian, and Greek cultures. This plant was used medicinally all across the world until about the 20th century. This is when it started to become used more recreationally, and that's around the same time when it became illegal. Today, we are seeing this plant become legalized medicinally once again, and now legalized across the US recreationally. I myself have a long history of using this plant both medicinally and recreationally, and I personally have experienced how it has helped me, but I also have experienced how it's hindered me and been a disadvantage. I also can't help but think about what's going to happen to the quality of the plant now that we're seeing this massive industry take off in a recreational manner. So what I want to know is how was cannabis used medicinally back in ancient times? Is it used in Ayurvedic medicine today, and how? And are there any dangers that we should be aware of as to how it's being mass consumed as a society today?
Thank you. That was a great introduction to cannabis. So my take and my training in Ayurveda was sort of interesting. You know, in my training, cannabis was definitely considered by Shashrut a toxin. It was considered a toxin substance. And if they did use it in Ayurveda, which they did, they would never use it alone. They would rarely smoke it. It was always taken, you know, mixed with other herbs and purified. It was always had to go through a purification process where they would soak it in ghee, boil it in milk, boil it, soak it, squeeze out the toxins, and then dry it. It was never used the way it is used today. So I think there are clearly medical uses for it. There's no question about it. There are plenty of studies to show that there is benefit. And there are also plenty of studies to show that there is risk, you know. A little bit might be okay, no problem, but a lot more can actually create a lot of real health concerns. And when it first got legalized here in Colorado, where I live, you know, they did studies and they knew that adolescent use was the one demographic that was at real risk for this. And after they legalized it here, the only demographic that increased its use was that demographic. And I was like, wow, that should be enough for it to be not legal. Because if you're going to do that, you got to protect. Now we know we have one demographic that's at risk. You got to protect that one demographic. And we absolutely did not. And I think that was really did a lot of harm. Ayurveda, it was never used every day. If you're going to get on it, get your medicine, get better, get off, fine. That's how it was used. Now it's used as a recreational drug every single day. People use it, and they don't realize the psychological impact of that. Basically, you know, there's a lot of studies showing there's psychosis and different types of problems that can come with certain groups of people when they take it for a long period of time. There is it doesn't come without risk. It can make you dull. It can reduce cognitive function. But it's tamoxic. It's a tamoxic drug.
Interesting. I did read a bit about the purification process, and the Ayurvedic doctors that I talked to in India, they said similar things to what you're saying. And for those listening, so the Sanskrit words tamas and rajas, these are referring to the quality of the state of mind. I cover this in my Ayurveda and the Mind episode, but when something is rajasic, this is referring to the quality of change, activity, and turbulence. And so this is the quality of our mind that gives us the energy to move, to perform, do daily tasks, and it keeps our consciousness ever moving. And it also keeps our consciousness disturbed and distracted. And this is the state of mind that most of us are in for a majority of our waking state. But when something is tamasic, like how John is saying about cannabis, tamas is the quality of dullness and inertia. And so this is the energy that produces feelings of having no motivation, lack of clarity, feeling stuck. So when someone is in that state of mind, we say that they have a tamasic mindset. So it's interesting that you're saying that weed puts us in this tamasic box.
So there's value in a tamasic drug. If someone is super hyperactive and they can't settle their mind, nervous system down, and they're trying to meditate, but they can't because their nervous system isn't thinking incessantly, and thinking and thoughts are really, you know, the obstacle to our spiritual progress, right? So you give them a little bit of marijuana, it has a tamasic effect, it calms their thoughts down, they can experience the self maybe at a deeper level, and it can be a tool to give them and guide them into experiencing something beyond or besides thoughts incessantly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I can relate to that because especially in college, you know, I had such an imagination. I had so many ideas. I would take on so many projects at once that I knew I couldn't handle. And every time I would smoke weed, it just calmed everything down and I was able to hone in on one project, get it done, and actually get it done well.
I think a lot of people actually do well on it and thrive on it. You know, people who are really smart and super intellectual and their mind's going a mile a minute, I think it helps them a ton to calm them down, you know what I mean? And help get that be stay on track and on course as opposed to doing a million things, you know, a mile wide, inch deep, you know, never doing anything really deep. I think it helps them focus and become more productive. So I don't mean to say that being a tamasic box or having a tamasic agent is necessarily bad for everybody. It's bad if you're already a little tamasic, though, and then you become more tamasic and you kind of fall into that trap. But if you're super rajasic, then it can have a calming, beneficial effect. Like I said, there is medicinal value. I would never debate that. I just think that you have to be careful as an individual how it works for you, you know? And is your life better since you started doing it? You know, are you more productive? Are you happy? Are you more successful? Are you feeling more able to love and care on others? I had a patient of mine, he was like 58 years old, and he came into my office, big construction guy, and he started crying in my office. And I said, "Why? What's going on?" And he said, "I smoked pot my whole life, since I was as young as I can remember. And I had a family. I raised two beautiful girls, they're now grown up, and I recently stopped smoking weed. And I realized that that entire time I was high, raising my entire family, and I never really understood love. I was never able to love them fully because I was high." And he was in tears because he said, I felt like I just missed that whole experience, not only just for me, but for them. They didn't get full love. They didn't get me. They got the high version of me. That wasn't me. That was not who I am. And when you love someone fully, there's a great study. I love this study so much. It's when they took people and they gave gifts, either hedonistically, where they wanted something in return. Like if I gave you a nice gift, I would love you to say, "Oh, John, it was so beautiful. It fits so great. And thank you, thank you, thank you." So I got something out of it. Or I could give you the gift eudaimonically, where I don't have any expectation. I just thought of you and gave this wonderful gift because the joy was in the giving, right? And they measured the genetic impact on both those kinds of giving. And when they gave hedonistically, it had a negative effect on the genetic code of the person they were giving it to. So I would hurt you by hoping that you...
Wait. Hold on. Did you just say when a gift was given hedonistically, meaning expecting something back in return, it had a negative effect on the genetic code of the person receiving the gift?
Yeah, where when they gave in a eudaimonic way with no expectation, it had a positive effect on the genetic code of that person. So when you're high and you're trying to have like a relationship with someone, it's sort of a false sense of spirituality. It's a false sense of really deep love. You know, it's different. And this guy was in tears because he finally experienced what true love was and had such remorse for it.
Wow.
So it's a slippery slope, just like alcohol is a slippery slope. It doesn't mean you can never do weed. You could do it. You can do alcohol on the weekends. Not to say that there's plenty of science now about why that's probably a really bad idea.
Maybe no to the alcohol. We'll dedicate a new episode to that one. But you know what I found interesting was in Rishikesh, where I was, you see all these gurus and these sadhus walking around, and you meet some of them, and some of them are very anti-smoking anything, right? That no tobacco, no weed, hashish, and they view their body as this sacred vessel. But then you meet some other sadhus and they also view their body as this sacred vessel, but they'll also smoke hashish and tobacco quite regularly. And they say that it helps elevate their perceptions and their spirituality. So what is it? Is it helping? Is it dulling?
You know, I think that in India as a spiritual agent, it was help. People who were incessant thinkers to stop thinking so much so they could feel, because you have to learn how to feel. Mm-hmm. Marijuana does provide certain levels of feeling. It gives you more of a feeling. It does dull the mind, so it allows you to feel a bit more, but also dulls your senses so you don't feel much either.
Interesting.
But it can, I think, be a tool for sure to help people stop the crazy thinking and the incessant thinking and dial down and create a level of neurological calm, the whole monkey mind thing, and just be able to really function in the world, because we're all so uniquely different. And I think that's the real takeaway.
Yeah.
And we're going to all react to everything uniquely. I mean, I've been in practice using herbal medicine for almost 40 years. People react to the same herbs in different ways all the time, you know, and it's almost always their individual sensitivity and the dose that I gave them. And that's what scares me when people say, oh, this new ashwagandha is like 100 times more potent or whatever. I'm going like, wow, you don't know what you're doing, because you created a drug that you don't know the impact of that drug and the interaction of that drug. But if you take the whole plant and you dial it down and use a tiny, tiny, tiny amount, you can find the right dose for that right person, because there's bugs in there that provide a level of intelligence that provide, you know, a more normal, natural response to how we evolve to interact with plants. You know, I think that the bottom line is that the content of the THC when I was a kid was just like, you know, was like minimal, really, you know what I mean? And now it's amped up to a point where it's so extreme and everybody wants the bigger bang for their buck. And that's America. More is better. 100 times potency is better on everything, whether it be a drug or an herb or a supplement or a nutraceutical. Everybody wants the bigger, better. And I'm so against that as well. And I think the plan has been altered.
That's exactly what I was afraid of with this mass industry that's booming. What's happening with that?
Actually, I was just at the Ayurveda conference in Orlando a couple of weeks ago, and they did a whole panel on cannabis, and they were talking about how the THC content is so great that that's probably the thing that's causing so many of the side effects that are happening. Number one, kids are using it every day, or people use it every day, and the THC content is off the charts, and there's no CBD in it to balance out the THC. Where in the plant, normally, historically, there was a balance. Mm-hmm. And what they're finding, some of the doctors are saying, what they're finding is they give CBD to these people who are having THC-based psychosis and anxiety and things like that, that it actually balances them out, because they're actually taking a plant that's not in its natural state.
Oh, wow. So they're essentially manipulating the plant in a way to remove the CBD, make sure that there's more THC, aka a stronger high.
Because whatever goes up must come down. And the bigger, the higher, and the greater the up, the greater the down. And then the roller coaster just gets bigger and more dangerous. And that's the thing that begins to happen is, and to realize that you know, less is more, for sure.
And yeah, I read that this has actually only recently been investigated, the importance of having both THC and CBD working together. You know, weed is said to help in certain cases of inflammation, but it actually works significantly better when the CBD is also present, because you're getting more of that balanced medicinal effect rather than the anxious negative effects that we're seeing it cause. And, you know, when you're shopping at the dispensaries or online, it'll show you the percentage of both THC and CBD. So I guess you want to steer away from those products that have high THC and low CBD and opt for something with a more equal balance for a more positive effect.
You know, when you take an herb, a plant, and you take one constituent out of that plant, right? THC or curcumin and turmeric, for example, another one of 300 constituents, you made a drug. It's a drug. And it has consequences, side effects. You know, like on TV, they say, you know, make a real pretty picture on the boat, and then they list everything why you should probably never take this thing. And that's exactly what happens when you take curcumin. It is a medicine that cures diseases, but it also blocks stem cell activation. It also doesn't work anywhere near if you take the 299 constituents of turmeric, and then you took the curcumin and you compared them. The turmeric without the curcumin works so much better than the curcumin. So, you know, in nature, there are what are called bacterial endophytes on plants that naturally occur for millions of years. And they provide benefit to the plant. They help the plant grow. They provide immunity for the plant. They provide some of the biochemistry of the plant to support its benefits. When you take an extract or you sterilize it and you make it sterile, which is what all herbal extracts are sterile, you've completely changed it. If I took all the bugs out of you, you'd be a different person. Mm-hmm. And so
it's like drinking too pure of water. Drinking too purified of water actually depletes your system.
100%. And that's what we've done with herbal medicine, and either by taking a plant and saying it's 1,000 times more potent, so therefore it must be better when it's completely sterile and it's acting like a drug that might actually have a benefit on X, but it's going to actually have a side effect on Y and Z, So that's where I think a lot we went wrong. America is America. We want to make things bigger, better, stronger, more powerful, more potent, supersize. And that's what happened with marijuana. And it became legal, so you can get it every single day. And it was originally legalized for pain. Mm-hmm. You know, one study, it was shown to reduce pain by 30%, which is a whopping benefit for pain. Well, and here's where it gets into my pet peeve about marijuana use, is that in Ayurveda, there's an old saying that says that the pain is directly across from the bliss.
Yes, we also learned that in yoga.
And the reason for the pain is to get your attention. Mm-hmm. So you can go to the pain, through the pain, access who you truly are, and let who you truly are out. Mm-hmm. But if you take something that gets rid of the pain for you, then you have no roadmap. Mm-hmm. To experience yourself, which is what life is about, which is the roller coaster ride and becoming independent of the field, becoming waterproof of the highs and the lows. That's what it's really about. Mm-hmm. And weed just makes you happy and content in the box that you don't ever really have to get out of. And I think that's affecting our culture to a certain extent.
Yeah. I think it's definitely affecting our culture because, you know, well, for one, that's a very powerful perspective shift. And that's also what yoga teaches us, that if we avoid the pain, then the pain and the emotions, they're going to get stored in our body. And that's the mind-body connection that we talk about in Ayurveda, is how these unaddressed emotions get trapped in our system. And this is why we see such an uprise in health imbalances today. And, you know, I talked to some of my teachers and doctors that I met while I was in India, and they said very similar things to what you're saying, how weed is, yes, immensely medicinal, but always done through purification processes. And once you're on it, you get off of it. You take what you need and then you get off. And it's been interesting because whenever I suggest herbs to the individuals that I work with, they always ask, will I need to take these forever? And that's the difference between herbal medicine and pharmaceutical medicine. When we give these herbs are addressing the root cause to help bring your body and mind back to its original state of balance. And once the diet and lifestyle is corrected and the doshas are managed with the help of these herbs, then you no longer need the herbs because you have transformed your habits and lifestyle into something that's much more suiting to you and your constitution. And so I guess with weed, you're saying it's the same thing. You use it as medicine, you take what you need, and then you leave it alone. Otherwise, it becomes like this emotional crutch where we don't want to face that pain, face what's really going on under the surface. Wherever there's lightness, there's also darkness.
Yeah. So I think that's the thing is like we use it, we don't use it the way it was intended. We use it now. And look what's happened. It's a massive industry. It's so popular and people are using it on a regular basis. And I think that can be done in a safe way, depending on the constitution and how you feel. Obviously, people who like it, take it, and people who don't like it, don't take it. And that's fine too. But the point is being a little bit more self-aware of the impact. Like you realized you were using it and it wasn't actually serving you in the long run. Mm-hmm. And I think it's very deceiving where you could think I'm getting this amazing benefit. And everybody that I've ever talked to when they're taking it, they think it's the best. Oh my God, this is a spiritual agent. You know, I have relatives who will swear up and down it's spirit until they stop. And some of them have now they're a little older and they're going like, wow, you know, that wasn't what I thought it was. I did it for 30, 40 years thinking I was going to become enlightened or whatever. And it never happened.
Yeah. This past year when I was in Mexico, you know, I've always been surrounded by weed. Like if I wanted it, I could easily get it. But when I moved to Mexico, it was the first time that I had no direct access to it. I mean, I'm sure I could have gotten it, but I didn't want to. I didn't seek it out. And so I was fully alcohol free, fully weed free. And it was just me and 5 a.m. sunrises and eating a clean diet and doing my yoga practice and meditating. And the level of clarity that I had without any substances was absolutely, it was a huge turning point for me. It was absolutely life-changing.
Yeah. So it's deceiving. I felt like that's what Ayurveda kind of brews and meditation kind of brews. It brews a level of self-awareness. So you kind of naturally want to do things that are going to be more life supporting. Like I never feel like I can't drink or I don't want it or I shouldn't, or it was never, ever like that. But the beautiful place is that I've gotten to a point where I don't want it, you know, and it's like what I desire is, you know, I feel like things that are more life supporting for me as opposed to hiding and numbing. And the more I can clear the window so I can see the crap that I've created from patterns of behavior that made me survive and protected me as a young kid, and I can free myself from those mental patterns of behavior, that to me is the journey that is harder when you're high. Because you don't have to do that when you're high. You're high, you're happy. And not only that, you know, I think Ayurveda is like, you know, diet, lifestyle, but it's also like it's the one system of medicine that is, you know, taking us to our full human potential, to a place where we really, what we're really about as human beings. You know, it's not just about getting rid of your heartburn, which you can do. It just takes you so much further. And that's what I just am so fascinated by it. It how they knew so much so long ago. It's amazing to me.
Yeah. Well, they certainly had much fewer distractions than we have in today's world. But that is what's really so incredible about Ayurveda is how it teaches us and exposes us to just how beautifully powerful we as human beings really are. And I think your perspective on this is very valuable too. I know it's not the popular one that a lot of people, even in the Ayurvedic space, take, but you know, it's really not, this isn't talked about enough in our Western world. And it's not to say that this plant has so many useful medicinal benefits. You know, we've seen it time and time again over so many years with research to back it. But I do see that the problem really is in how it's being used and mass consumed without the proper education on how this plant should really be treated, farmed, and cultivated so that we can get the most use out of it. We do have to use it with a little bit more awareness. And you made a lot of good points that I want to recap. That one, it completely depends on who you are constitutionally. That will influence how you respond to different strains of weed. Number two, to take a look at your life. Are you happier? Are you more successful? Are you more loving and kind to others? Is your life better with or without it? And number three, if you're going to use weed, then please try to find strains that still have their CBD to THC ratio and that it's not just pure THC. And I'm going to insert this fourth one because I know that this was a big one for me, but it's to ask yourself, why do you smoke weed? I completely agree that a little bit here and there is no big deal, and if I had to choose, I would still always prefer weed over alcohol any day, but for those of you who smoke weed regularly like I used to, you know, why do you do it? What does it give to you that you can't give to yourself? And John, if there is one thing that you want our listeners to walk away with from this conversation, what would it be?
My favorite quote from a book by a man named Henry James in the early 1900s wrote a book. He said the three most important things that a human can do is, the first thing is to be kind. He said the second most important thing a human can do is to be kind. And he said the third thing is also to be kind. And if you dissect that, which I have, you know, one level of be kind on one level, that's easy, right? It can be kind to anybody, you know. Be kind on the second level, even when they're mean to me, that's, you know, I guess I can do that. But to be level three kind, that's sort of like be a doormat. You know, I'm always nice to people. And that's where people misinterpret that. What it really means is that what's inside of you is a level of joy and love that, and I can give you the science behind that fact, that we are essentially joy and love. And the third level of be kind is that no one has the right or the power to take that away from you. And it's our journey to let that out as best we can, whenever we can, as much as we can. And that's, I think, that's really the takeaway here. You know, if people started looking to be kind from the inside out, they would stop looking from the outside to get things to make them happy on the inside. We got it backwards.
Stop looking for that external source and start uncovering it from within yourself and then let it shine outwards. That's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. And I think this conversation today really left us all with a lot of new food for thought. Thank you so much for being here, Dr. John Douillard, and for sharing your wisdom with me and with everyone listening. You know, sometimes the truth is not the truth you want to hear, but nevertheless, the truth doesn't need you to be true.
100%. Thank you, Julia. Really nice to meet you and spend time with you.
If you want to learn more about Dr. John Douillard and the work that he does, I included all of his information in the show description. And if you or anyone you know has been trying to better balance their weed intake or has unwanted behaviors surrounding vaping, nicotine, or social drinking, I do have a new program called Dosha Detox. Dosha Detox is a holistic program that's meticulously crafted to help guide you on the path to liberation from unwanted vices. And Dosha Detox isn't just about breaking free from harmful habits. It's about reclaiming control over your health and vitality, one mindful choice at a time. In this program, we draw upon ancient Ayurvedic wisdom as well as modern holistic practices to offer a comprehensive approach to detoxification and rejuvenation. All of that information can also be found in the show description. That's all for today. Thank you all so much for being here. And until next time, I will talk to you next Tuesday.